Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
I'm Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Welcome to Something Is Off. We have a lot of updates to get into today. Normally, we come out on Fridays, but this is an update episode. So here we are with a ton of stuff to talk about.
Going to load up the swear jar.
Reload it.
Load it up. Necessary. Okay. Preloading.
Preloading. You know. Is there anything you need to tell the audience before we go?
There's one thing I want to say. I love reading the comments on our YouTube, so please keep them coming. I love it. I even love the ones that are trying to be like dissy about
snarky.
Us, like the one that says, Lavoie, you overtalk and then speed talk out of guilt. It's annoying as fuck. First of all, thank you so much for your advice on the way that I talk. I've only been podcasting and doing radio for 15 years, and I so appreciate it when somebody feels like they can help me in some way with the way I talk naturally as a human being. So appreciate that. Anyway, keep the comments coming. We love them. They're all great.
Oh, boy. I was like, yeah, it's spelled Lavoie with an E.
It's okay. I mean, it's only up there the whole video, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway, I do overtalk. That's something everyone who knows me knows, but I'm not nervous. I promise.
Yeah, you're not nervous. And this is not scripted. So this is just us talking like we're sitting in our living room, like over a cup of coffee talking.
Yeah. So I'm actually annoying. Yeah, I'm annoying this AF in person, so, too.
You are not just annoying. Don't say that about yourself.
All right, so we have a couple of things I want to get through that are a little bit gossipy, but I just want to throw them out there because people are talking about them. One, there is a rumor that I've seen a couple of different places that the, quote, ice cream truck is back in Canton talking to folks. I have seen somebody specifically said that the feds had been talking to Jen McCabe. I don't know if any of this is true, but it's out there in the ether and it's something we will be tracking.
What is the ice cream truck, Rebecca?
The ice cream truck is the FBI, Mel. And the reason I refer to it as the ice cream truck is because when Jen McCabe was on the stand in trial two and was confronted about how after the FBI initially contacted her, she immediately called everyone to tell them. She was like, you know, it's just like when you call your people to tell them the ice cream truck's coming down the road.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. She's just a
soccer
mom.
How I would describe it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It actually reminds me of I went to Fort Lauderdale a few months ago with my sister on like a little weekend away. And white sharks are so common on the beach there, like so common. And they swim like within 8 feet of of the actual shore, like after the break. And they just, and so what will happen is you'll be hanging out on the beach and a lifeguard will just walk down the beach and go, hey guys, out of the water, there's a shark coming. There's a shark coming. And everyone just sort of who lives there just sort of casually walks out. And then this shark is like, dun. Anyway, that's the ice cream truck of Canton, Massachusetts. I watched the Turtle Boy stream from last night, which is, by the way, peak Turtle Boy. Peak. So
I
interesting.
Didn't see it.
But at this, okay, well, he let this woman, Valerie, come on because she was calling him a liar in the comments. And what she was referring to was the fact that he denied initially having taped Karen Reed and still hasn't acknowledged having taped Karen Reed illicitly on the phone. And by the way, and as he said, like, you want me to confess a felony while I'm on bail? I'm not going to do that. And she just kept saying, but if you just owned it, whatever, you're such a liar. Poor Valerie. Okay, so don't get on Alive with Turtle Boy if your intent is to debate him. That is my advice for almost anyone in the world. Not because I don't think he would even say that he's the smartest or best debater in the entire world, but because you are out of your depth. It is his stream. And he can mute you whenever he wants, and it's his right to mute you whenever he wants. But like, when you repeat yourself again and again and again and again, the straw will break and he will start to call you horrible names. That's what happened last night. I don't condone the names, but I do understand the frustration. One of the things that he intimated was something that I had been talking about a little bit on the show and behind the scenes, which is there's clearly been, or appears to have been, a breakup on Karen Reed's legal team. It appears to be Alan Jackson versus, not versus, I don't want to call it like a, I don't want to make it like a street fight, but Unetti and Alessi, Alan Jackson. And there have been some sort of passive-aggressive-y looking.
I hate to see it, though.
I hate it. I hate it so much. I'm sure there's a reason. I'm sure somebody made it difficult for them to all be together or whatever. He is a very different brand and breed of lawyer than they are.
Sure.
They were a great team together. And unfortunately, it seems like that team, the Beatles, are not getting back together. I don't like it. Do you?
No, I don't like it either. And it just seems to me like it's all sort of falling apart. You know, we had this moment, I think, I won't say we, but I think that the Free Karen Reed movement had this moment when she got out of these charges where everyone was very excited and they were all like, we did this together. And this was, you know, and I think it always happens that way, you know, but then egos become involved and I don't know, people are trying to make money. People have their egos. People are trying to have power and all of those things sort of drive good relationships apart.
Yes.
And I don't like it.
Well, as do, like, if you wouldn't have been friends before the criminal case, you're probably not going to be friends after the criminal case. That's a thing that I sort of keep thinking about. And Alan Jackson, yeah, he was a former DA. He has, like, a lot of experience on both sides of this. But he is also a bombastic media figure that has never been in question. He is a lawyer who thinks PR. He's a lawyer who thinks about media strategy. He's a lawyer who thinks about all these things. You know, one of the things that Turtle Boy talked about was how, which I hadn't heard of this before, but maybe he has talked about it before, but that, you know, Alan Jackson, he says, is who leaked to him that there was a federal investigation going on. Then he reported it. And then Alan Jackson in court said, there's been reporting about a federal investigation.
No.
By the
I
way,
mean,
that's a not an uncommon media strategy, by the way. Yeah.
No. He's savvy. I do think that my only observations are that Alessi and Unetti came onto the case because they truly believe that something very bad had happened to Karen Reed. Karen Reed was like, something truly bad happened to me and I have to fight for my life to get out of this. So I'm going to start with my lawyer, Unetti, and I'm going to build out this team. And I think Karen was completely responsible for getting, you know, Alan Jackson and all that. But the problem is that, like you said, they have two very different styles. They have two or three different styles. You know, like Alessi is this very
wonky,
studious. What?
Wonky.
He's not wonky.
Oh, he's so
wonky.
He's
kind of wonky. He's like an eel. Yeah. But he's like super studious. He's very, very, very like, you know, he's very careful about what he says. Unetti has tons of heart and fight and all that. And then Alan Jackson comes in and he is sort of the, you know, the face and the rock star and the blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And though I do believe that all of them believed in her innocence and believed in what they were fighting for, I think that, you know, Alan Jackson is the only one who could see dollar signs at the end of it.
Likely. Also, remember the initial email that Karen Reed sent to Alan Jackson trying to engage him? She said Unetti was in over his head. So if that's the tone with which the relationship is starting, you know, we'll just leave it there. We'll just, you know, I don't want to gossip too much about it. It just bums me out because you like to think that your Avengers are actually Avengers. And it's it's just a trial. So, okay. Yeah. Next item, we can talk about this more when there's more in the case, and we will.
Yes, we will, because there's
Aidan
more
Carney,
in the case coming soon.
Coming, like, as we tape this later today. Turtle Boy has a new judge. It's been specially assigned to his case, so Krupp is out. This new judge is in. There was some stupid chatter online about he's from Canton. Well, you know what? Lots of great people from Canton. As Turtle Boy said, Lucky Lochran's from Canton. Bev was not from Canton. So, like, someone being from Canton is not a disqualifier. But apparently, this judge is somebody that many, many other lawyers and judges really respect, really liked, and has made measured rulings in other defamation cases and in other harm cases. Like, he's just been very much like, harm was not proven here. Sorry, like, kind of situation. So I think that it seems like a good fit. Everybody seems happy about it. So I don't think we need to talk about it more, but we are on the lookout. I believe today is the day that Cosgrove is supposed to submit his filing in response to the mega motion submitted by Aidan Carney. And remember, the two cases that are sort of still has charges around are about the McAlberts and the pizza shop incident. And so that is coming today. And then I'm sure there will be, well, Turtle Boy told me there are going to be more filings from his side coming soon. So there's going to be more to talk about.
You spoke with Aidan recently, right?
I talked to him like an hour ago.
Oh,
and that was because
breaking
of the
news.
the next item that we're talking about, which is that Boston.com has an article out today. And Boston.com, by the way, is owned by the parent company of the Globe. They have an article out today called, quote, Alberts McCabe Higgins eyeing defamation suit against Turtle Boy.
Yes.
So do you want to explain what this article said in a nutshell?
Sure. There wasn't a lot to it. And I think, you know, when you and I discussed it previously, you had mentioned it's weird that they even, you know, reported on this because it only says that they are eyeing defamation. So this is stemming from, you know, in the civil case when Karen's lawyer said that they wanted to basically create a big package, add a bunch of people to the package. And some of those people were Brian and Nicole Albert, Jennifer and Matthew McCabe, and Brian Higgins. All of those individuals are now pushing back because they're saying that she's defaming them and that Turtle Boy is defaming them. So lawyers, basically, lawyers for though that group of people are saying that this is a quote-unquote vile work of fiction and it's a defamatory attempt to dodge responsibility on Karen's part. So they're still going with that line that, you know, Karen's at fault. They have proposed, see, none of this is like solid language, and that's what annoys me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've proposed filing motions to dismiss, possibly moving the case to federal court, which is kind of crazy to me, and also pursuing counterclaims against Karen Reed and Turtle Boy for defamation and other things. So
torts.
Torts. I didn't want to say torts. I didn't want to say it. That's why
that
I said
word. Tortious
things.
Interference. Or as you hear some people say on the anti-Karen Reed side, tortuous interference.
Tortuous. But yes.
Tortious interference.
Yeah. They're just basically like, this is procedurally improper. You can't lump us all together. Blah, 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 blah.
Probably right, by the way.
Yeah, probably right. But then well, my favorite part of the article is that Karen's lawyers are like, well, you know, the best way to figure out if something isn't defamation, it's for people to bring the truth.
Right.
And we have the truth. So right. The civil case is scheduled to return to court on Friday, which is this Friday, 11/21.
Yes.
So we should know a little bit more about what's happening with that and with this, you know, big package lawsuit.
Right. So in order to prove defamation, the prongs generally are an intent to harm and knowingly sharing things that were lies. I mean, that's very simple. Very yeah. simple. But the bigger one is knowing things that are
yes.
knowingly spreading things that are lies. And that's, you know, I think that, you know, the station I work for was on the other side of a defamation suit. We won against this guy, Eric Spofford. That story, by the way, was featured on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver last night.
Oh, interesting.
In a bigger package about public media, but how important that podcast was called 13th Step. But essentially, you have to know it's a lie and you have to intend to harm with the lie that you know you're spreading. That's, again, very simplistic. But
yep.
I asked, texted Turtle Boy and asked if he'd give me a comment on this story. He hadn't seen it yet. So you're welcome, Turtle Boy, for me sending you. It's so funny. Just like Turtle Boy is just like the thing we say about somebody whose real name is a real name, Aidan Carney. Anyway, so here's the response. And Turtle Boy says, I have been asking them to sue me for some time. If you, meaning the McCabes, want to play all this out in court again and relitigate it for your audience, go ahead. I can justify my opinion that you were involved in the murder of John O'Keefe. It is my opinion. You can't disprove it. A jury has said that John O'Keefe was not killed by a car, and that means someone else must have done it. The house was never searched. What other conclusion could they possibly reach? If any of these people were individually not involved in the death of John O'Keefe, then being in the house means they know who did it, and silence is complicity. So that was Zing. Turtle Boy's response. I would say your opinions, when you say something is my opinion, it's not bulletproof protection. But if you're clear that something is what you think, it obviously provides you with more protection. That being said, this entire story, and I'm on the fence about whether or not it should have been reported because I did get quotes from his lawyers, which is newsworthy. So, but I will say, what it is, it's the press strategy equivalent of sending a meaningless cease and desist, right? So a cease and desist will very often terrify people when they get them in the mail, depending on who you are, depending on what your position is. But a cease and desist is just that. It's we are telling you to stop. Otherwise, these things could happen, right? So what's notable here to me is that I don't think that they want to go through litigation with these people. They are not rich.
No.
What you very often get this from, the scary cease and desist, the shots across the bow stuff, are from very powerful people with money trying to silence less powerful people without resources. These cases are typically not taken on contingency, meaning a lawyer isn't saying later, I'll work this for free if you give me a third of your winnings. These cases are typically taken for lawyers' fees, which are expensive. And if you think that it's worth it to go through what Karen Reed is about to go through, which is 5 or 6 years of litigation in order to prove something, then you also have to be willing to pay all that money and expose yourself to all of the disclosure and depositions way more so than what happened in a criminal trial. So, and I think this is a suggestion for Mrs. O'Keefe to change her strategy. And the suggestion is that PR strategy to just sort of say, here's what we would do. Here's what we could do. But it's not
because
we will.
They don't
do.
Have money, so they're using whatever press contacts they have. And the thing is, if any one of that group reaches out to the press is going to talk to them.
Sure.
You know? Sure. And I know they don't have a ton of money, but Jen McCabe did buy that couch.
Jen McCabe, you think so?
Yeah.
She bought, was it Kate Peters?
It's my opinion. You don't sue me for defamation, Jen McCabe.
I don't know if she bought the couch or not, but all I do know is that if someone gives you money and then you use that money to buy a couch, maybe they technically didn't buy you a couch, but they did give you money. I don't know if that happened. I don't know. But it's, you know what it's like? It's like the Bubba story. It's just funny to talk about, even though it's probably not true. You know what I'm saying?
That trickled all the way down to our kids. Like our 14-year-old was like, Mel, did you see all of the memes that have been coming out about Donald Trump and Bubba? And I was like, oh, no. I had to, like, explain that whole situation.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that Mark Epstein had to actually put out a statement.
Saying Bubba is not Bill Clinton.
Bubba is not Bill Clinton.
It's like the J.D. Vance
that
couch
came
story.
From Clinton.
Yeah, it's like the J.D. Vance couch story, which is allegedly in an earlier draft of his book, which it was not. But it makes a great story, which is why it gets repeated. Okay, Turtle Boy say to me, and also said on his stream that everything that is helping him right now in his legal cases is coming from Corey Hopkins, Marbury v. Mad, and Lindsay Gaetani's tweets. So it's interesting. Very, very interesting.
And then
finally,
didn't Gaetani, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Didn't Gaetani, wasn't her Twitter gone this weekend?
It seemed to be gone very briefly, but that may have been a glitch on Twitter's end, and it's back. It's totally back. I thought it was gone for like 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden it was back. So who knows? So finally, I guess I'm over talking and then being nervous. Finally, there was an incredible set of news stories this weekend about an interview done with the jury foreman in the Karen Reed case named John.
Yes.
His name is Deloach, Charlie Deloach, sorry. And he's the person who you heard saying not guilty in the courtroom. So he was speaking to a group of criminal justice students at Fisher College.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said, you know, he has personal experience with the police. He said he remembers the Charles Stewart case where the police basically rounded up black people in Jamaica Plain instead of investigating the real killer of Charles Stewart's wife, which was Charles Stewart. And his family knew because he had told them. But anyway, so we sort of cited that he said, you know, he basically made up his mind immediately, which is why he took no notes when he heard from the first witness in the prosecution's case. Remember who that was?
I don't remember the first witness.
EMT Timothy Nuttall.
Nuttall.
Who basically said that he heard Karen Reed say, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him," through the closed ambulance door. And Deloach's reaction was, then why didn't anyone talk to her about that?
He also said, it wasn't in the reports. Let's just be clear, it wasn't in the reports.
He also talked about the lack of searching at 34 Fairview. And he talked about how the jury wanted to look at one piece of evidence, which was the taillight. And that the taillight that they showed in court was very different than the taillight they saw on the ARCA report and other taillight things that they've seen. So basically, yeah, he says, "I was open-minded. I was willing to listen to both sides if she hit him or if there's corruption, and the corruption outweighed her hitting him with the car." The jurors struggled with the prosecution's case. He said, quote, "That is a lie. That is a lie. It was just witness after witness, and the only credible person I can say was probably Mrs. O'Keefe. The case was leaning one way, and it was leading one way up until the very end." Now, remember, Peggy O'Keefe did come across as very sympathetic and credible, but she did not provide any testimony that was evidence that Karen Reed killed John O'Keefe. She basically just talked about how much she loved her son and missed him and so forth. And she was very, it's a very sad piece of testimony, but it was not an incriminating piece of testimony. Mm-mm. So overall, the justice system is flawed, he says.
Final conclusion, the justice system is flawed. Yes, we know this. I have one question that I'm just trying, I was trying to remember while you were talking. Was the Lexus at the viewing?
Yes, Lexus was at the view.
I wonder how many jurors actually like checked the Lexus out while they were there, or if they just sort of disregarded it.
I think you
point.
Can, because it was right in the beginning. Look at it. Yeah, I think they had to walk around and they were able to look at its position. And also, remember, they brought the taillight housing to court. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I'm just wondering like, because
this is it.
Yeah. No. I was just wondering if when because that the viewing happened on the in the first week. It happened in the first couple of days.
It happened the first couple of days after jury selection. Yeah.
I guess everybody was probably just so distracted with the Albert Rock.
My other Roman Empire is the Albert Rock. And I know people say, does it matter? Whatever. Yes.
It does.
In my mind, it matters. It was somebody trying to fuck with the scene before a jury view. That is not normal. Even if it was a joke, that is not normal. So I'm dying to know about Albert Rock. Even if it was like the current homeowners who like found the rock in the back and they were like, we should just put this out because it's probably how it looked or whatever. Just say that. Just explain it because it just opens up too many questions about it being there, it was being gone. Why? So that's my other Roman Empire.
We'd know a lot more about the rock if we could see those sidebars.
That's an excellent point, Mel.
It's one of the things that she would not talk about in open court and didn't want the jury to, like, she gave them the limiting instruction, but she never, no one ever talked about it openly in court. That was all decided at sidebar.
There's going to be so much good stuff in those sidebars.
I can't wait.
Come
on, Corey.
It's going to be stuff about things people said on the stand. Mm-hmm. There's going to be stuff about people who weren't allowed in.
It's going to be the arguments. It's going to be Alan Jackson arguing with Bev Cannone.
And Yannetti. Yannetti had a lot of sidebars, too.
I wonder when Karen started going to the sidebars, I wonder if she started saying anything at all. I don't remember.
But there was so the reason that she was at the sidebars was, first of all, a client is allowed to attend their own sidebars. They typically don't because typically it's procedural stuff. Typically it's stuff that the lawyer can then debrief the client on when they get back to the table. The issue with the sidebars in this trial is they were so numerous and so lengthy that the defense actually asked for a hearing device, a listening device from Bev's microphone to be given to Karen Reed so she could just hear them from the table.
Yeah.
And Judge Cannone said as her solution, which, by the way, was completely fine with me, was no, Karen Reed can come up and listen to him herself. Yeah. And I'm like, great.
I would want to.
Yeah.
I would want to. I actually, in the case that I covered, the Veronica Rodriguez case that I covered on the In Between podcast, you know, there were a lot of things that happened in that courtroom where she was really just relying on her attorney to sort of explain to her what was happening. Mm-hmm. And she had no idea that that was her right. She had no idea that she could hear the sidebars, she could go to the sidebars, anything. And I think once she found that out, you know, we were talking it out, she was really upset because she wanted to be involved in the whole process. Mm-hmm. And she was you know, and it's good to have a good lawyer, and it's good to have any lawyer on your side. But if you don't fully understand the process or what's happening, like, Pam Smart should have been involved in those sidebars that we're discussing, because her lawyers, not to go off on a huge tangent, but her lawyers, you know, Toomey and Sisti, made some pretty shitty decisions on her behalf in those sidebars. And the whole reason there were so many sidebars in the Karen Reed trial is because the lawyers aren't allowed to say why they're objecting.
Right.
That's the entire reason there were so many sidebars.
Right.
Because they're not allowed to say hearsay. They're not allowed to say anything like that. So they have to go and discuss it
right.
every time there's, you know, an argument about an objection.
Right. Or every time she would rule not in their favor, they wanted to get on the record what their issue was. That being said, is there a record if there's no record?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is going to segue. So we're going to segue into what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit for updates. We're going to see a lot more sidebars in the upcoming trial of Brian Walsh, because, oh boy, they did their final pretrial hearing today, and it's probably still going on. I only caught, I think I missed, like, you know, the past like 20 minutes or so of it. There's so much going on, and that case is going to be just as spicy as the Karen Reed trial.
I want to hear about it. Tell me. Tell me.
I'm going to tell you all about it. I will say this. I'm starting to understand that, like, I know that there's no changing it right now, but the idea that lawyers can't say why they're objecting to something is now kind of blowing my mind.
Wait, is that the case in the Walsh case, too? Because that's a judge's discretion. Is that what's happening in the... No.
I thought that was a Massachusetts thing.
No. Bev said it was a Massachusetts thing. Yannetti said, I have tried tons of cases in this state, Judge, and I have not experienced that before. But yeah,
really?
I've been thinking the entire time
that it's a Massachusetts thing.
No, it's judicial discretion.
Whoa.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus. Most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Yes.
Well, I'll be interested to see. This judge is, she's on top of her shit. Her name is Judge Diane, and I'm going to probably botch her last name, but it's Freniere, I think. She's amazing. F-R-E-N-I-E-R-E. Freniere.
Okay. So in New England, you just pronounce that Frenier. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but we take every French name and make it sound as dumb as possible. Hence, Rebecca Lavoie, not Rebecca Lavoie.
Dubois.
Arsenault. every French name gets like French, Canadian, Americanized once it comes here. So name a French name, and I'll tell you how it gets pronounced in New Hampshire.
I think it's Freniere, but you're saying it's Frenier?
I am saying that if it's a French name, it would be Frenier it would probably be Frenier in French, but in like New England, it would be like Frenier. It would be like as flat as possible.
Frenier.
But if it's Freniere, if it's an Italian origin name or some other kind of, I don't know where all the accents are, but I'm just saying, even if it's any name that could be a little bit pronounced with an accent in New England gets turned
foreign.
Into the flattest, like those Italians.
Exactly. That's my grandmother. I think I want an Italian sub. An Italian sub.
Yes, we can take it. We're doing fine. We Italians.
All right. Everybody's okay.
Everyone's fine.
I think I'm 1% Italian, but I'm mostly just white trash, Euro white trash.
Can we just say Judge F?
Say Judge F. I don't mind saying Freniere. I think that's pretty.
All right.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but I'm going to call her Judge Diane, okay? So because since we call Bev, I'm going to call her Diane.
Yeah, equal opportunity first naming. And granted, we should be doing it for men as well. So
That's true. She is on top of her shit. She knows all the facts of this case, and I am very impressed with that. So the biggest things that have come out of the trial or the hearing today is that she has deemed him competent to stand trial. And that trial is going to start on December 1st. They will start jury selection and they'll do voir dire and all that, starting December 1st. She also denied a change of venue. She said that they hadn't proved that basically the media attention was salacious enough. I don't think it's as big of a case as Karen Reed's was or It's not like OJ level or anything like that. So motion to change venue is denied. Here's where some of the crossover comes in. You know that Proctor's messages and emails were brought up alongside the Miles King. Scapiccio brought up, you know, all the issues they might have with the Proctor messages in regards to Miles King. Also, Brian Walsh's team brought it up as well, but the judge in that case said that they didn't really see that there was going to be that much of an issue. The issue is still that Proctor was involved in this case. So I don't know this for a fact, and I'm not sure anybody does, but I did notice that Melanie Little mentioned that she thinks that the nudes that are on Michael Proctor's phone are of Anna Walsh, which is really sick.
I think
she
said that they could be. I don't know. I mean, basically what they said was nudes of people.
Of victims.
Who were not. Yes, victims who were not, like, it was victims, right? That's what it specifically said, victims?
Yep.
I thought of two things immediately. I thought of sexual assault victims, potentially, like, case photos. I thought of Sandra Birchmore.
Yes.
I thought of, I didn't think of Anna Walsh. That was interesting. But Anna Walsh was, we know, having an affair.
And well, so there's a lot more to it, too.
Yeah. And if there's stuff that was on Brian Walsh's phone or Anna Walsh's, if there was stuff on one of their phones about that kind of stuff, I don't know. It could be. I don't want to speculate too much, but that would be bad.
This case, I will tell you, is so tech heavy. Like Cellebrite's back. This is so tech heavy. There are thousands of pages of messages that are being and searches. That are going to come
in. You mean Cellebrite, whose extractions don't actually mean anything, according to the Commonwealth in the Karen Reed case?
This is what I'm interested. This is one of the reasons why I really want to watch this case, because I don't know who they're going to call as a Cellebrite representative. I hope it's not Ian Whiffen again, because he was obnoxious. But the issue, and they went over this a little bit today, and the reason why I think the hearing is taking so long is because they're having to go through like message by message almost. Because, or not message by message, sometimes it's text messages, sometimes it's searches. Brian Walsh's search history, they went through every device in that house, including his son's iPad, you know, the MacBook Pro, everything. So they have thousands of pages of search history. The judge wants to know date and time of all those searches. And if they happened around Christmas, if they happened around the first, if they happened before Anna Walsh left for DC, if they happened after Anna Walsh was, you know, like she is like on top of it. We'll get into it in a minute. The crossover starts with Proctor because the defense wants to call Proctor, of course.
As they should.
The Commonwealth will not call Proctor. But guess who will be testifying if Proctor is unavailable?
Who?
Yuri Bukenik.
My most favorite, least favorite witness.
I hope he gets to read more
the witness,
messages.
The witness I hate to love and love to hate.
These are awful messages.
Yeah, yeah.
These are awful messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Commonwealth will not call Proctor. The defense will call Proctor. Bukenik will testify in Proctor's absence. And Fanning will also testify. And Fanning testified in an evidentiary hearing this year that he backdated a report to 2023. In this case.
Oof.
Here we go. So here's, I'm just going to give you a few bullet points. And then I want to talk about this story that was sent to me by one of our listeners about this case that is incredibly interesting. I have no idea what it means, but I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. So a few more bullet points. The Commonwealth wants to show the jury photos of Anna Walsh wearing jewelry and sitting on a rug that was found in dumpsters behind Brian Walsh's mom's house.
Say that again.
So the Commonwealth has videos and photos of Anna Walsh wearing jewelry. Like there's like an Hermes scarf, some kind of watch, something jewelry. And then she's sitting on this rug in their family home. And all of these items were found in the dumpster behind Brian Walsh's mom's house.
Okay.
Yes. So the judge did not allow them to show video. There was video of Anna Walsh and her kids on this rug. And I think that the judge didn't allow it because it would, you know, make the jury sympathetic because it's a woman who's been murdered sitting. Actually, there's no body in this case, just to be clear. No one has found Anna Walsh, and that might lead into what I want to talk about next. But here's another thing. We also have a federal case involved in this trial. And so before anything happened with Anna Walsh, Brian Walsh was under GPS ankle monitor with the feds because of his art heist.
Right.
And I talked about it in the last episode that we talked about this. So go back and watch that.
Wild.
Yeah. The judge. OK, this is complicated. Let me see if I can break this down. This is what I understand. So when the Massachusetts State Police were investigating Anna Walsh's murder or disappearance, they discovered Brian Walsh's movements in GPS, but not the GPS that was on his ankle. That GPS didn't have any sort of, the way I understand it, like satellites. It was mostly, they were like, he's allowed to drive his kids back and forth to school. And this specific satellite, I mean, the specific GPS on his ankle didn't really tell them where he was. So I don't understand what the whole point of it was, but he had an ankle monitor on. The investigators discovered where he was moving because they looked at his two phones. He had two phones. And so they used the GPS on his phones to figure out his movements. So because of that, the judge is not going to allow them to talk about the federal case. Because that's the only thing it has to do with this case.
Got it.
Interesting. Huh?
Very interesting. How the hell did the GPS on his ankle monitor, isn't that what it's for?
That's what I thought too. I'd never heard of it before.
Isn't that you can prove that you haven't left your house for the work, the places you're supposed to be going? Is that the whole point?
The judge is the one who actually made that point. She's the one who was like, well, this GPS did it. But it's in the hearing today. If you want to go back and listen to it, I'll link to it in the show notes so everybody can watch it. I watched it through
Boston 25. Yes,
maybe
Fox yeah. 25 Boston.
Yeah, so I'll link that.
There's a
I'll
few TV
that.
Stations. Yeah, that's Fox.
They've been so good though.
Yeah, they've been a lot better lately. I have to
their
say.
YouTube is great. They constantly air these hearings, which is wonderful. One other
also
crossover,
by the way, plug for their YouTube. There's a clock on the stream on there for the Karen Reed case. It was always like I'd be watching it while I was working live or whatever, and then I needed to pull a clip for the readathon, and I would just make note of whatever time something happened, mm-hmm. and I was like, on every other stream, it was just like it started one time, ended 8 hours later, and then you just had to hunt. But the Fox 25 stream had like a little digital clock in the corner, so you could tell what time something happened, and I was always
it
like,
was amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. Very good for content creation.
One other crossover that I found interesting is, I don't know if you knew this, but Lara McLaughlin has also been on this case for the Commonwealth. But the judge gave her a hard time a few weeks ago. I don't remember what it was about. And she hasn't been in court since then.
She doesn't need, she doesn't get, I should say, enough shit for the Karen Reed case.
No, agreed.
In my opinion.
If she's the one that wrote all of the motions.
She did.
So here are a few other little facts about the case that a lot of us weren't aware of. I think this is going to be a very, like I said, tech-heavy case.
Can I just ask a question? Wait, just going back a second. Mm-hmm. Did it come out? Was it decided today that Buchanek would have to testify if Proctor wasn't available?
No. It's not something like that the judges said. It's something that I heard from, I think it was Melanie Little's channel.
Okay, I'm just curious because earlier this month, like he went to Tampa for like a sports thing.
Yeah, he was drunk.
And there's all these incredible photos of him. And
his
granted,
belly.
Everybody's allowed to do with that. Whatever they want to do on their own time. You want to travel to Florida.
Hat.
You want to do whatever. When you put your like badge on the table next to your like 15 empty, one of those can bottles of like Bud Light or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
With no shirt on and all that stuff. It's like, that's a choice, man. That's
and
a
he's
choice.
Wearing a Stady trucker hat.
It's a choice.
It says
just
Stady
like karaoke,
on it.
Just like public karaoke. Choice, man.
I love
all
karaoke.
I
so love
does
it.
He. So does
I
he.
Love karaoke.
Gotta love that about him. Points for Buchanek.
Points for Buchanek. So the judge will allow statements that were made. This is very complicated too, because this relies heavily on all the text messages and Facebook Messenger. So it has been established that Anna was having an affair. She may have been having several affairs. We're not really sure. The defense is saying that they were in an open relationship. That doesn't quite go with some of the other stories that they're talking about. But the defense says that they were in an open relationship. The judge is going to allow statements that Anna Walsh made to her friend Alyssa Kirby and witness, his name is Will Fastow. That was her actual boyfriend, that Anna had made to them. Because, and it shows motive is what the Commonwealth is saying. The defense is saying it doesn't show motive because they were in an open relationship and Brian Walsh didn't care that she was having an affair. But that goes against all of his searches about, which I'll get into it in a minute. They've said one search out loud and I was just like, oh shit, this is going to be friggin' messy.
What was it?
I will tell you in just a second. So the defense objected to, said they want to bring in all the text messages too. The defense objected to some of the message. They don't think that any of the messages from William Fastow, who was Anna's boyfriend, should be admissible, which is crazy. But because Brian Walsh brought those messages up in a police interview. So he basically told the police that there were messages from Fastow. But, and so that's saying, that the defense is saying, so he didn't really care, but again, he cared because of what comes next. The defense was saying it's all hearsay. The judge is like, tell me how it's hearsay. And then it seemed like nobody in the courtroom could answer that question. And so she was like, OK, we'll move on from this for now. Mm. So the defense is saying that the Commonwealth just wants to wave around these messages in front of the jury to prove that she was having an affair and that that's why he killed her. But the thing is, Will Fastow, he's going to testify.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge decided not to make a ruling yet. And she's saying that they might have to do it a message by message basis.
Right.
There are thousands.
Also, can't they just make him read any message? Well, if he's, but they're also between her and her friend, right? They're not just between her and him.
So there was, there were messages between her and her friend, Alyssa. I don't know if Alyssa is going to testify. I assume she would, because basically Anna went to Alyssa. This was during the Christmas holiday. And she was telling her that things were getting really bad. They'd had a horrible argument, blah, blah, blah. And that's why the judge was like, I want to know the dates of these messages. I want to know the dates of these searches. Because what he was searching for, I guess we'll go ahead and get into that. Oh, wait, no. Let me get into one batshit crazy thing before we get into the messages.
Okay.
There was a moment in today's hearing where Brian Walsh's mom was brought up again. And apparently, Brian Walsh's mom hired a PI on her own. Because she had met with a psychic who told her that Anna was having an affair.
Okay.
On Brian. Brian apparently didn't have anything to do with hiring the PI, but he did give her the name of the private investigator. So the interesting thing that was happening in today is that Brian Walsh's mom was sitting in the courtroom and they were starting to discuss her. And then one of the lawyers stood up and was like, well, she's here. She can get up and testify if you want. And the judge was like, what do you mean she's here? Get her out of here.
Yeah.
And so she kicked her out and then they let her
come. She's a potential witness, right?
Yeah.
So you can't be sitting in hearings if you're a witness.
Yeah. The Commonwealth doesn't know if they're going to call her yet, but they might. And so she's just sitting there listening to everything.
No.
Yeah.
No,
so she kicked her out.
No.
But listen, then the defense is like, well, he wants his mommy to come back. And so the judge let her come back.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's what he wants. That's what he wants.
Yeah. So anyway, she was asked to leave. Then she could come back after they were, you know, done talking about her. And then the only other thing that really stuck out to me before I had to get away from the hearing was that the Commonwealth, and I don't understand why, but they are not going to introduce bone fragments that were found on the saw in his basement that was apparently covered in blood and had been used to chop somebody up. And
wonder why that is.
We don't know, because there was a very lengthy sidebar and she said the point is moot. The judge said the point is moot after that. So
are they not her bone fragments? Is that the issue? Were they planted?
I have no idea. I don't know. No
idea.
Is this
like the glass in John O'Keefe's shirt situation?
It could be. I don't know. Let me tell you, though, about a batshit crazy internet search that this man made.
Okay.
And maybe I just think it's bad. Maybe I'm actually prejudging. I don't want to be that person. But the judge was like, I guess I should read this aloud. And then she ended up not doing it. And they all did this game where she was like, you know the one I'm talking about. And they're like, yeah, we know which one you're talking about, judge. And she was like, okay, we don't have to say it. But there was another one that one of the other attorneys, I think it was for the Commonwealth, said, well, I mean, let's take into consideration the search where he says cheating wife has threesome and gets impregnated porn. Porn. That was the title of the porn. Cheating wife has threesome and gets impregnated
porn.
That's what he was looking for. So that was a fetish.
That was a fetish. So the defense is saying that
I just want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Them.
Okay. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt real quick. Has he admitted making that exact search, yes or no? Or is it just in his computer?
No idea. I have no idea. What I'm telling you is there are thousands of pages of these searches.
I believe he made this search. That being said, devil's advocate, which who would fucking advocate for the devil, but whatever. Sometimes when you start typing something into your Google, fills in the rest for you.
Really? For this one?
I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying that if I were a defense attorney, I might point out the fact that sometimes when you put in, how Rebecca Lavoie is a foxy babe might just come up. You never know.
No, so you're saying that maybe he started writing cheating wife and then AI was like, has threesome and gets impregnated porn.
Or cheating wife has threesome. Wasn't there a rumor that she was pregnant? I heard that rumor.
Yeah, there was a rumor that she was pregnant.
It makes sense, especially if he thought she might be or if she was.
Yeah. So that was sort of the most salacious thing that happened today. But all I know is that they said that one aloud in court, which means the ones that they didn't say out loud are so much worse. But he was looking up things like divorce, several different kinds of porn, which I'm not going to police anybody's porn watching, whatever. But yeah. Anyway, what were you going to say?
You know what this reminds me of? Like
what?
The Michael Peterson case.
You know,
This was the staircase case. And I have very strong opinions about actually happened in that case.
We should talk about it.
If you think it was insane, we should talk about this in the show sometime. But I'm just going to say in a nutshell. If anyone thinks that I am insane for thinking an owl actually did it, it is the only logical thing this case. There is so much fucking evidence that an owl did it, including... Now, an owl did not murder her. An owl didn't fly down and say, I'm going to kill this lady and make sure she runs up the stairs. It is the only logical forensic explanation for the talon marks and the feathers inside those talon marks was that she was struck by an owl, started bleeding from the head, and then tripped on her way up the stairs. That being said, their marriage became a big question.
Yeah.
In the case, as did their finances, because they were in a tremendous amount of debt. So Michael Peterson was an author living in North Carolina with his banker wife. I think she was a banker or a consultant of some kind. Anyway, she was a high earning wife. But they had hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. Mm-hmm. They had leveraged their house over and over again.
And lots of kids.
He had kids. She had kids. They had combined family. I will just say this to my audience right now, our audience. Watch season one of The Staircase. It is, in my opinion, it is the Casablanca of true crime documentaries. It is the OG holy fucking shit true crime documentary. It's the first one where you hear lots of cellos, which you now hear in every fucking true crime documentary.
I love a cello.
There is a French team of journalists who were fully embedded in Michael Peterson's defense team.
Yep.
And we see everything, including lots of interviews with the prosecutors. But the thing that's interesting about it and the reason it's so good is the Citizen Kane of true crime docs is because every episode ends and you're like, oh, he did it. And the next one ends and you're like, no, he didn't. And the next one ends and you're like, oh, shit. And they actually discover a key piece of exonerating evidence on camera. It is fucking wild. The blowpoke.
That's what it was.
And this reminds me of that because a big thing in that case was Michael Peterson was either bisexual or gay. I think
pretty gay.
He's pretty gay. He was married to a woman and they had sex ostensibly, so he would say he's bisexual.
That was because it was how old he was and the time that it was.
Listen,
that's what he had
I
to
am
do.
No expert on
I am.
on the spectrum of sexuality when it comes to being whether someone should be judged bisexual or gay. That being said, if you say he was gay, you are a better source than
I am. He's pretty gay.
But he had correspondence and he had sex with male escorts, and one of those pieces of correspondence was used in the trial. And that male escort was brought in to testify, which I don't think was great for the prosecution, because the guy was basically like, all he talked about was how much he loved his wife. It's insane. So but the defense I think made a mistake Because the prosecution's case, they had this complete alcoholic prosecutor, who, by the way, I'm not making any like speculation. She later died of alcoholism and like, was in a lot of legal trouble. But her whole thing was moral panic. He is such an immoral.
She was awful.
What did she call him? A deviant? You know, because he was gay, right?
Yeah.
And that's what she tried to bring that in. And so the defense, I think, made the mistake, instead of just saying there's nothing fucking wrong with being gay and being married to a woman, people do all the time. They said instead that Kathleen knew about his sexual predilections, that they had somewhat of an open relationship and they were very open. And I think that's less likely. I think, as any juror would, it's less likely that she knew than it is that he was just doing it on the down low, but also loved his wife.
Yeah,
and I think the best evidence that he didn't do it, one of the best pieces of evidence, is that, aside from the fucking feathers in her head, is that the escort said that all of his correspondence with him and all of their conversation was about how much he loved his wife.
Yeah.
Why on earth would he be setting up a fake story about how much he loved his wife with an escort that he never thought in a million years would be testifying against him in a legal case? Because people say, oh, well, of course he would say that, you know, but no, why would he be covering his tracks with an escort? The escort is the person to whom he would say, I fucking hate my wife. I wish she was dead so I could do this all the time.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be telling the escort how much, that's just my opinion. But I do think that bringing in all of this morality stuff.
Yes.
Is a mistake. Like, it's a mistake to bring in that the victim was having an affair. And I just think it's a mistake, because I do think that the general thing should be people's sex lives are messy. They do messy shit. No one deserves to be murdered no matter what they did.
And nobody knows what happens in a relationship.
No.
Between those two people. You just don't know. I'm starting to understand that their lives were actually very messy. And that's going to, I'm going to try to cover this quickly, although it seems like a pretty hefty bit of information. So one of our listeners, Tony, sent me this article. And okay, I want to say this right off the top. This is an article in the New York Post. So do with that
you're
what
saying,
you will.
What is it called? Grain of salt? A
grain
whole
of salt.
Basket of grains of salt, perhaps?
A whole bucket of salt. But there is some like verifiable information in here that I find really interesting. So I've been hearing
even the
these
Daily
rumors.
Mail gets it right once in a while,
yeah,
my friend.
Exactly. Anna Walsh was working in DC and she was a regional property manager for this giant property company called Tishman Spire. So there's a gentrified section of DC in the Navy Yard where all these people have sort of moved in and made it hip. And there is this luxury apartment building called The Crossing that is there. And she was the property manager for this building. So here's where it gets interesting. This building and her company became the center of an FBI investigation in 2022 after two men, I am going to botch their names, but I'm going to call them Ariane and Hader. I can't pronounce their last names. Were arrested for posing as federal agents while living rent-free in multiple units and infiltrating the building security systems. This is all while Anna was the property manager here.
You know what that makes me wonder?
What's that?
Makes me wonder if they knew that people with information were going to be living in those apartments.
Yes. So let me tell you what they did, because they've been caught. So they impersonated Homeland Security and U.S. Special Police, which I'm putting that in quotes because there's no such thing. They acquired guns, tactical gear, and surveillance tools. They gave gifts and free apartments to real law enforcement officers, including Secret Service, that were assigned to the White House and the First Lady's detail. Then the authorities came in, and when they came in and figured out what was happening, they seized sniper scopes, drones, gas masks, police IDs, and they said they described their whole setup in this apartment building as something out of a spy thriller. The pair even offered to buy a $2,000 assault rifle for a secret security agent.
So we know they were arrested in 2022. What year was all this happening? All this
This was happening in the investigation. They became the center of the investigation in April 2022. So it had been happening previous to that, too.
Okay.
So four federal
was happening during the Trump administration, not during the Biden administration, the stuff?
So it would have been it would have started before 2022. Yeah. So it would have been Trump and Biden.
OK,
I guess.
Got it.
Trump into Biden.
Yeah.
Not that it really matters, but. Four federal agents were placed on leave as a result of this investigation. The residents are still, to this day,
livid about everything that happened. One resident said she saw video footage of other tenants on one of these guys' phones, indicating covert surveillance throughout the property.
Damn.
The residents were fearing for their privacy was compromised because they suspected that possible foreign intelligence ties to these two guys.
Yes.
Because they both had Iranian visas. And then not only was Anna Walsh the manager, the property manager of this building, she was also the regional manager and was responsible for building oversight during and immediately after the scandal. So residents also described, this is how they described Anna, which I found interesting. Residents described Anna as quote unquote forceful and shady, claiming she lied about her identity to avoid questions and downplayed any of their security concerns. Tenants also accused Anna and her company of withholding information about the investigation and avoiding transparency even after the FBI had raided this entire building. And then one of the tenant board members said that management did everything they could to avoid sharing information with them, which I think just made everybody even more suspicious.
Right, which also is in line with corporate practice, to be fair.
Sure, for sure. Yeah.
Listen to me, devil's advocating again.
I know. Tishman Spire actually said that, you know, after their internal review, they confirmed no unauthorized access to residence units, which was one of the things that the residents, I think, were really sort of nervous about, that these guys had full access to this building. They could go in and out of people's apartments when they weren't there.
Mm.
And no one was stopping them.
It's like the Arconia, but not cute.
Yeah. The company claimed to have cooperated, you know, with the feds or whatever. But like I said, the tenants were like, we're not really sure what happened here. The tenant association actually accused the company of lying and obfuscating and blah, blah, blah. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because
I can bet I know.
Well, tell me why you think I'm bringing it up.
Because if I were the defense, I would bring this up as potential alternative suspect, like,
yes,
the situation. So, there's a case in Concord, New Hampshire that we should talk about on the podcast. Although I have to be careful about how I talk about it because the news outlet I work for covers it. Mm-hmm. A murder of these two people in Concord, New Hampshire, the Reeds, Stephen and Wendy Reed. Mm-hmm. And this was a few years ago. This was in 2022. They were shot on a trail in Concord, New Hampshire together, mm-hmm. which does not fucking happen. And they had just recently moved from Washington, D.C., where mm-hmm. they worked in international development. They'd come back from overseas. Right. And the guy who was eventually arrested for murdering them had been living in a homeless encampment mm-hmm. in Concord. They found his burnt out tent and they found all of his stuff. They called him the Mountain Dew Man because he was always buying Mountain Dew. He allegedly worked at McDonald's. He did work at McDonald's. But when he was finally arrested, keep in mind, was unhoused / homeless.
Yes.
He had $7,000 in cash in an envelope on him. He yep. had a fraudulent passport that he had actually traveled on internationally before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of questions now about the searches. His case is now in front of the New Hampshire Supreme Court about illegal wiretaps and stuff, potentially illegal wiretaps. But I have always had questions about this case. It's been sort of presented to the media as being cut and dry. They found the guy. And I was like, all right, he lived in a homeless encampment, yet he had, and by the way, the envelope that the money was in had the same name as his fraudulent passport. So there's a question to me. How did he get the passport? How did he get the money? How does a person travel to another country on a fraudulent passport unless it's a very good fraudulent passport? And the answer to the money thing is like, well, he worked at McDonald's. I'm like, you know how long it would take you even making $15 an hour to save $7,500 working at McDonald's?
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, I have a lot of questions about that case, but it brings up the specter of, you know, was he an intelligence asset who killed them, or were they killed because of their work potentially in intelligence? Because a lot of people think that I worked in international development for the government, can be, in the past has been a cover for the CIA, but it's an interesting
case. That was just sort of a summary of the article that I was reading. There was a lot more about, you know, Anna, I don't know how they set everything up. They didn't own the property they lived in, the property where apparently she was murdered. Or allegedly where she was murdered. They were renting, and there was something to do with one of the other things that wasn't allowed into won't be allowed into the trial is that in order for them to get the place that they were renting in Boston, Brian Walsh's mom had to be like a co-signer. They were in financial trouble.
Yeah.
But the weird thing, the thing that doesn't go along with that, is that Anna also owned property in like Cohasset. She had just sold a house in Cohasset for like $1.4 million. So there's that. I don't know enough about what's happening, and I'm hoping a lot of this will come out in trial. But what I know isn't going to come up in the trial is that Brian Walsh's mom sued. I think it's Brian Walsh's mom. Don't quote me on this. There is a suit happening.
Just quote yourself.
There's a suit that's happening. I'm just recalling it from what I just heard today. There's a suit that's happening against the police for. No, that's not right. There's a suit that's happening from the landlord to Brian Walsh's mom because the police tore this place apart when they did their raid and they were gathering information.
So she's liable, right?
So she's liable. That's not going to, they're not going to allow that to come into trial either. The judge won't allow that to come into trial. That is right. So basically, I'm like, that is right. And you can believe me because I am Mel Barrett.
And then we're going to fact check it later and issue a correction on the podcast.
Exactly.
Nothing wrong
anyway,
with that.
The interesting thing to me is that there were a lot of shady dealings happening, right? So Brian Walsh was already in trouble with the feds, already had an ankle monitor on because he tried to sell a fake Warhol. Anna is like selling off $1.4 million properties, but for some reason they have no money. They're renting. She's going back and forth to D.C. It's rumored that she had many different relationships, but that she was in one like serious relationship with this guy who she was apparently preparing her own apartment in D.C. for her kids to come live there. So they were obviously talking about divorce. Divorce was many times in the searches that Brian Walsh did. There is the issue that all of her. Well, the main issue that happened today that's just sticking out in my brain and making me think something's off here. Oh, I did it. There it is. Something's off. The judge isn't allowing them to introduce. They're not going to introduce the bone fragments.
Yeah.
So I am like, do they actually have forensic evidence of her murder? Uh-huh. If they don't, then all they have is evidence of all of her belongings being thrown in a dumpster.
And they also have the searches, which may or may not come in, right?
And the cleaning products that he bought. All of that is circumstantial.
Yeah, which is circumstantial evidence is evidence as a whole. Like you're allowed to consider circumstantial evidence. That being said, if
she's still missing,
is the defense going to be allowed to bring in this spy stuff?
I don't know. That's what I'm like really interested to hear because
I would.
She was the property manager of a building where two Iranian nationals had taken over surveillance and had access to everybody's property and were giving weapons to Secret Service and were faking themselves as police officers. And she knew about it. She would be killed for that.
Maybe. I'm just saying it would be a compelling story. It's crazier than the McAlbert conspiracy story. That's for sure. But I
also don't want to be like, well, I don't want to be taking, I'm not taking Brian Walsh's side, but I'm saying if he has a defense and they can use that in their defense, he should. I mean, that's definitely another culprit.
The problem is the investigation was done by these clowns.
Yeah,
so,
Buchanan came to D.C. Did you know that?
No.
He came all the way to D.C. to go look at this apartment building. That's part of the reason why he's testifying.
So this is the problem. We have a guy who made searches about cutting up bodies, murdering his wife, how to hide her body, how to keep body from smelling, all this stuff.
Sure.
We have that, or we appear to have that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe his 8-year-old son did it on his own iPad, whatever.
Yeah.
But we appear to have that. We have a missing woman. You know, it should be, by any measure, if all of this evidence
cut
is legit, should be cut and dry. But the investigation was done by a clown car full of cops.
Yes.
Who, and a Commonwealth who, in a previous case, did nothing but extol the virtues of these cops who were later proven to be corrupt. And their own forensic digital evidence, they basically dispelled the veracity of the very kind of digital evidence they're going to try to use in this case to convict this guy. So, even if I think that Brian Walsh did it,
yes,
and it is my opinion that the evidence against him seems decent.
All right.
He has rights. He has the same rights you and I did, and we've never killed anybody. And I do not want to see him get railroaded by cops, even if he did it. Maybe that's controversial, but that's how I feel.
No, I think that this goes in line with the pundits on late night TV who are arguing about immigrant rights. And I'm sorry, but our Constitution says that immigrants have rights. They have due process. And they are in this country, and that means they have due process.
And they're not voting. Because if they're not, because you can't. You're not. No, there's already law against that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We probably should never go down that tangent, but I'm just like, we have laws in this country for a reason, and it's to protect the people who are innocent. And those laws also sometimes protect people who are not so innocent.
Correct.
But I'm not going to take those rules away, those laws away from anyone, because more often than not, it's going to protect the innocent than it protects the guilty. But in this case,
it's not a bad analog. There are plenty of people here in the United States who are here illegally who did commit that crime. But you have to have a process to establish that they committed a crime. You can't just decide. And you shouldn't. I mean, maybe if the Supreme Court says you can, then you can, because the Supreme Court actually interprets the Constitution. Thanks to what case? Marbury versus
Jesus,
Madison.
Marbury. Yeah. I'm like, don't test me right now.
Welcome to
while you were talking,
SCOTUS
I was thinking,
blog.
Yay, we still have gay marriage. That was like one bright spot this week, that marriage equality was protected, which was shocking to me.
Bright for you, you mean? Bright for you.
Yeah, bright for me and nobody else. Okay, Rebecca? It's only about gay
people. Because I'm a great ally. it's ridiculous.
And also
ridiculous,
there's a white genocide happening in South Africa. Friggin' so stupid. People believe it. People believe it.
People also believe the earth is flat. Come on. They also believe that birds aren't real. You know, that's a whole thing.
You know what's real?
What?
Owls who scrape your head off and then you
fall
on the stairs
attacked.
And die.
I've had neighbors of mine attacked by owls and they've literally been injured by them. And that's a whole story for another day.
It's
anyway.
It's terrifying. Yeah.
So do we have anything to talk about later this week, or is this the podcast for this week? I'm okay either way. Just let me know.
I mean, I think we probably will. I've got plenty of stories to tell you.
Yeah. There's going to be a Cosgrove upfiling, so we can talk about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. I think there's going to be a bunch of shit happening this week. They're going to try to pack it all in before Thanksgiving. So we'll figure out what we're doing, because we normally record on Thursdays. So Thursday is Thanksgiving in 2 weeks. So we'll figure that out and let you guys know what's happening. Again, thanks for everybody for the tips. So appreciate it. Yep. Here's the link.
Just so you know, just because I'm doing this now doesn't mean you haven't put the graphic there.
No,
several
not,
other
Rebecca.
Times during this show.
Absolutely not.
You've put it there, right? You have
yes,
put the
absolutely.
How to donate on Venmo
yes,
graphic.
I've done it.
Thank you.
I've done it already.
Bad cop.
For those of you who are listening and not watching, if you want to leave us a tip for our little true crime work that we do, it's Mel Barrett Writes for Venmo. So at
Mel
Barrett
Writes. Do you love speculation and gossip? Send us a tip. No, we're also both journalists.
Checkers.
We're giving you our smart analysis of what we see, and we're being as measured as it's possible to be with this clown car set of cops.
Yeah, we're like The View, right?
No.
This is like The View.
No, this is not. This is like Tucker Carlson. We're just asking curious questions.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I hate the fact that Nick Fuentes is like gaining traction. That's terrifying to me.
Well.
And I also, I would like to talk about the conspiracy theories surrounding.
You need to just cut this whole fucking part out of the podcast. Cut it out. Cut it out.
Why?
Just because I don't want to touch that with a fucking pole.
Okay.
I don't want to touch it.
All right. I don't cut it out. I appreciate you, Rebecca, and thanks for jumping on early with me. And I know that we'll have lots more to talk about on
same,
Thursday.
Same,
I want
same.
To talk about one other thing. If anybody doesn't know the story of Sam Nordquist, I did a couple of episodes on The In-Between about his case. It happened this year, actually. Who Sam is a trans man who was held hostage and sadly tortured and then murdered by his partner and several of her friends and exes, and she involved her two children under the age of 12 years old in the torture and murder of Sam Nordquist, and his body was found in a field in upstate New York. They have charged seven people with his murder and torture, and they are taking it to trial, I think, at the beginning of the year in January. His case really needs eyes and ears on it. So go listen to the episode where I break down what happened to Sam. And then I also did an interview with his mom and sister in a second episode. And at some point, Rebecca, I'd like to talk to you about that case because it means a lot to me.
I look forward to hearing about that.
I'm sure you do.
You know what's off over
it's
here?
It's not gruesome at all.
You know what's off over here and just as high stakes?
What's
my
that?
Dog Briscoe is faking a limp right now. I swear to God.
I'm taking
him to the vet in 15 minutes and they're going to charge me $500 and they're going to say he's faking it because right now he's literally like...
Ruby fakes peeing because she doesn't like the cold. So I'll be like, okay, go outside, go pee. And she'll run out and she'll squat and she'll just look at me. And then she'd be like, okay, I'm done. And then she'll come away and there's no pee.
They're the real criminals. They're the real criminals, Mo.
All right. They're evolving. We're going to be talking soon.
All right.
Okay.
This was fun.
All right.
Thanks so much for...
I will see you later this week.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on the program, Mo.
Of course. This is our program. I'll see you soon.
Thanks.